Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're going to Vrindavan tonight through sound. And the place is the place where the Agasura demon came to challenge Krishna. And we're reading from, starting from 10:12:26. There's not lots of commentary, but continuing something that we discussed yesterday. There's a situation. Jiva Goswami was describing the position of Lord Ramachandra, and then in turn explaining the position of Krishna, where Krishna, with the wives in Dwaraka, Krishna was acting as if he was an ordinary householder, although obviously he wasn't, because he had 16,108 forms of Krishna, so he's not ordinary. But he was conducting his activities with the queens as if he was ordinary. And the reference went to Lord Ramachandra when Ramachandra was acting in his relationship with Sita as if ordinary. That is, although he's omniscient, he was behaving as if he wasn't. And the behavior was, he was going, with Lakshmana, going mad in search for Sita after Sita was kidnapped. And, there are two verses towards the beginning of chapter 11, canto 9, and towards the end, where he was doing so purposefully. One of the reasons he was doing so was to instruct his devotees, or to instruct people in general, that when one becomes too much attached to male-female association, then one has problems. So this commentary by Jiva Goswami concludes that section that we read yesterday. Lord Rama's pastimes have two purposes. One purpose is to show his love to his devotees. So Krishna does, Lord Ramachandra does. There's a second purpose. That's teaching people in general the path of renunciation. So it's one of the opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is renunciation. And when one doesn't have that detachment or renunciation, it can be very problematic. So the conclusion from yesterday. The Lord's pastimes bring auspiciousness to all kinds of people. What seems on the surface to be material, such as material lust, is in truth spiritual love for his devotee. Thus, there is no defect in the Lord's actions. Because we're going to, this is coming up because Krishna seems to get bewildered. Which is interesting because he's omniscient. one would think if you're omniscient, you wouldn't get bewildered. But in Krishna's case, because of his yogamaya potency or lila shakti, that both terms are used, he seems to get bewildered. So let's hear. Text 26. So the cowherd boys and the calves have gone marching into the mouth of Agasura. In the meantime, that's Tavat. In the meantime, while Krishna was considering how to stop them, all the cowherd boys entered the mouth of the demon. The demon, however, did not swallow them, for he was thinking of his own relatives who had been killed by Krishna and was just waiting for Krishna to enter his mouth. Now his relatives, we've been discussing this, but Agasura had a brother and a sister, and they were also asuras. Putana and Bakasura. They'd already been killed by Krishna, and he knew it, so he wanted to get Krishna to take revenge. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, just as Krishna decided to stop them, the boys entered the serpent's mouth. But the serpent did not swallow them. Why didn't he swallow them? Remembering the death of his brother and sister, Hata Svaka Atasmara Neha, he was waiting for Krishna. Now here comes an answer to what has always been something of a mystery for me. Let's go back and say there's part of the truth about Krishna is he has unlimited potencies because he's Bhagavan. The nature of Bhagavan is he has potencies without limit. And one of those potencies is, it rules many other potencies, and that's Satya Sankalpa Shakti. So we know what Shakti means, potency. Sankalpa Shakti means a potency when you desire something, it happens. Sankalpa is an attainment you wish to gain, your intention. So, sankalpa. And Satya Sankalpa Shakti is a potency by which Krishna, anything he desires, he fulfills. So here's the doubt. If Krishna desired something, why did something else happen? Did it set your sankalpa go to sleep, or what happened? So, to think that, this is no Vishwanath Chakravarti's explanation, to think that, although Krishna wanted to stop the boys from entering, he could not do it. And that is Satya Sankalpa Shakti, that is, every desire the Lord has fulfilled, was thwarted. That consideration is incorrect. Here's the correct consideration. The devotees, that the cowherd boys, had a desire. If we go into the serpent's mouth, will he swallow us? If he swallows us, our friend Krishna will kill him, as he did Baka. So of these two desires, the desire of the devotee prevailed, as it was explained previously, by the principle that the Lord is controlled by his devotee. The Lord is controlled by his devotee. This is all arranged by the ever watchful Lila Shakti of the Lord, which destroys all contradictions. So we know what Lila is, it's pastime, and Lila Shakti is the pastime by which his pastimes are conducted. So Lila Shakti, the potency of the Lord, wanted that the desire of the cowherd boys would be fulfilled because Lila Shakti knows that Krishna likes to fulfill the desire of his devotees. So although he was considering, Lila Shakti arranged it otherwise. Jiva Goswami writes, Just as he decided to stop them, the boys, along with their calves, entered the snake's mouth. This incident, like Krishna's external pastimes of killing demons, takes place because his dear devotees were absorbed in prema rasa. This is the real conclusion, as with previous incidents. Otherwise, this could not happen, since Krishna's every wish is fulfilled, satya sankalpa, and he is the very form of all knowledge. The calves entered because the boys followed after them, clapping their hands and making them run, since otherwise they would have fled away in fear. The boys with the calves went into the stomach of Agha, though they did not at all want to enter, since it was frightfully dark and full of fire. Though they were unlimited in number, how many cowherd boys were there? We heard this earlier. Asankhyataha. Sankhya, you know the meaning, Sankhya? Count. And asankhyataha, too many to count. So that's how many cowherd boys. Too many. Unlimited. But by the influence of Lila Shakti, they could all fit inside. Agha did not prevent them from leaving by closing his mouth and swallowing. Girna. And then Sanatan Goswami writes, just as he decided to stop them, the boys along with the calves entered the snake's mouth. This incident, like Krishna's external pastimes of killing demons, takes place because his dear devotees were absorbed in prema rasa. This is the real conclusion, as with previous incidents. It's the same message. Otherwise, how could this happen? Since Krishna's every wish is fulfilled, satya sankalpa, and he is the very form of knowledge. Paragraph. One should not say that his external actions, which are for the benefit of the world, can be understood, and the internal actions of he who is deeper than a million oceans cannot be understood, for he has nothing to hide from his dear devotees. Jamunacharya is referenced, Stotra Ratna. Jamunacharya? Jamunacharya?
No.
Jamunacharya? Ramanujacharya? Jamunacharya. Okay. Jamunacharya wrote in Stotra. You know Ramanujacharya?
No.
From the disciplic succession called the Sri Sampradaya.
Yeah.
So Ramanujacharya is the one who is the principal acharya that wrote all the commentaries on Vedanta Sutra and this and that. His spiritual master
was
Jamunacharya.
Okay.
Okay. So Jamunacharya writes in his some prayers, O Lord, who surpasses three types of limitations, some persons, having pure devotion to you, constantly see your fame and generous nature, though it is hidden by you by the power of your maya. Some perfected, pure devotees can see him. So, for the devotees, there's nothing hidden. So there's some kind of argument. I don't know that at that time, apparently, there was a group of people or devotees or philosophers or some people like that saying, well, to some extent we can understand as external, but we can't understand as internal. And he's saying that's not so. If Krishna's thoughts were beyond comprehension, Sukadev would not be able to describe his thinking in verse 25. Now we're at verse 26. So let's go back to verse 25 and see what he's talking about. Verse 25, Shukadeva's understanding the mind of Krishna. So Shukadeva's narrating, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is situated to the Supersoul, Antaryami, in the core of everyone's heart, heard the boys talking among themselves about the artificial python. Unknown to them, it was actually a Gasura, a demon who had appeared as a python. Krishna, knowing this, wanted to forbid his associates to enter the demon's mouth. So how did Sukadeva Goswami know Krishna's thoughts if you can't know Krishna's thoughts? That's a contradiction, sounds like. So qualified devotees can understand both the inside and the outside. So it's not a worthy argument to say what was going on with Krishna we can't know, because some devotees know. So now, while Krishna decided to prevent the boys from entering, before that, tavat, before his desire arose, they entered. Hearing the talks of the boys, he had decided to kill the demon, Rakshaha. This resolves the issue. So it's a puzzle. He's watching them going into the mouth of the serpent, and he wants them to not go into the mouth of the serpent, but they go into the mouth of the serpent. And he's all powerful. So how do you explain that? There's a few different explanations. They had practically already entered as he was beginning to consider, they went. Anyway, the demon did not close his mouth and swallow the boys. He was waiting for Krishna. Text 27. Krishna saw that all the cowherd boys who did not know anyone but him as their Lord had now gone out of his hand and were helpless, having entered like straws into the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who was death personified. It was intolerable for Krishna to be separated from his friends and the cowherd boys. Therefore, as if seeing that this had been arranged by his internal potency, Krishna was momentarily struck with wonder and unsure what to do. Fantastic, huh? Vismitaha is the Sanskrit word. Vismitaha means you get bewildered. And Dishta Kritena means things arranged by his own internal potency. So there's a nice teaching about primary rasas and secondary rasas. Do you know that teaching from Nectar Devotion? Five primary rasas. You know what they are? We did this last time I was here. Remember?
You're asking me?
I'm asking by...
Same question. So spiritual affection, like a mother just... No,
let's start at the bottom. Neutrality. Then service.
Service, like a friend.
Friendship.
And then...
Parental. And then the gopis.
Oh, yeah. Gopis.
Conjugal love. Neutrality,
service,
friendship, parental, conjugal. Okay. Then that's the five. Then there's seven secondary. Yeah, we won't have to name them. But one of them is astonishment. So Krishna became, he was experiencing, by Lila Shakti, he was experiencing a secondary rasa. The nature of secondary rasas is two main things. They seem to eclipse the primary rasa. They become really prominent, and that's like prominent is the secondary rasa. But meanwhile, the primary rasa is being nourished, while the secondary rasa is being prominent. So his affection for the cowherd boys was being nourished by the secondary rasa. And then it subsided. It's because the secondary rasas they're not steady. That's sthayi bhavas, the steady ones. Steady, sthayi. But they rise and they fall and they nourish the primary. And then they mix around and make nice taste. So Krishna was having that momentary struck with wonder. And when you're struck with wonder, you're not really sure what to do. So that was, although he's omniscient, he was... So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, seeing the boys escape from his hands like jewels, and fall into the fire of the snake's stomach like blades of grass. Moved with compassion, Krishna was astonished at the actions of his Leela Shakti. Dishta Kritena, or of time, Dishta, in having them enter the serpent's mouth. What was the cause of his astonishment? Krishna began to consider. It is not possible for these cowherd boys to have prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma means karma that's happening right now. You know, something's falling on your head. Or, you know, the fan works. that's a good karma one. Or bad karma. So that whatever's happening right now, that's prarabdha karma. So it's not possible for these cowherd boys to have prarabdha karma. And besides, the super soul, that's his expansion, does not give them the tendency for karma. Because super soul is my expansion, then karma does not do anything unfavorable to me or to them. Therefore, the Leela Shakti has made this seemingly unfavorable arrangement with the desire to put me, full of prema, into the compassionate mood, karunarasa. On seeing this unfortunate situation, how astonishing is her control over me, who am the form of all rasas, the king of all Leela, Leela Purushottama. Right? Though the sorrow due to separation from his friends remained, with the rise of astonishment, this maya bhava, it reduced a little. It rose and then it subsided. This is the meaning. Jiva Goswami writes, Krishna, who is the giver of fearlessness to the universe, saw that the boys, solely depending on him, had gone far away from his hands, which give fearlessness. They were now suffering, since by dying they would be separated from him, and were now like grass in the fire of the digestion of Agha, who was death personified. Krishna became astonished by the results given through prarabdha karma, although there wasn't any. But actually this event occurred according to the mood of the Lord, who is filled with pleasure by performing human-like pastimes. Dishta means his appointed Dishta Shakti, which covers his pastimes as Leela Shakti, when the Lord comes as avatar. He was astonished by what had been done before his eyes, Dishta Kritena. He was amazed that in front of him his dear friends had been swallowed up. Or, Vismita can mean that he lost his smile out of grief, because smitta can mean smile. And this smitta means he lost his smile. His discrimination vanished because of being controlled by affection. Grinarditaha. His nature is to be most merciful. And we're ending with this. Though he was soft with compassion for them, because they had no other shelter, Ananya Natan, he understood that they escaped from his hands and were about to die. Therefore, he was astonished. Now, this happens some other times. One other time, a very prominent one, is with the Kaliya serpent. When he saw the cowherd boys and cows lying by the side of the Kaliya lake as if dead, because of prema, he loves them and they love him and they're his life and soul, and I mean, he's omniscient. But because of affection, he was controlled by his affection for them. Now, we sometimes, you know, Krishna's doing this and our doing this are not the same. It's not the material kind of attachment. The material kind of attachment is all about we're at the center and it's our enjoyment and that kind of thing. And for Krishna or Krishna's devotee, the object of love is everything, because the devotee takes full shelter of Krishna. Krishna is everything. So like, when same thing happened with Bakasura. I'm asking your younger daughter here. Do you know who is Bakasura?
Well, I've heard of
you know what? Which one he looked like? Bakasura. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know the bird
god. Yeah, he had a big beak, a really big beak. He actually, when they came to him, they thought maybe he was a mountain. And then they got closer. It's not a mountain. It's some kind of an animal. Wait a minute. It's not just some kind of an animal. It's a big bird with a big beak. Looks like a mountain peak. And so some of them were afraid. So Krishna didn't want them to be afraid. He approached. Now he knew, because he's omniscient. And when he approached, by Krishna's arranging, the beak of the bird was so big that he put Krishna in his mouth. And when the cowherd boys and Balaram, who is also omniscient, saw that, they fainted. Now why did they faint? They fainted because, and why did Balaram become bewildered? Because his affection for Krishna is so strong. He's omniscient. He's all powerful. He knows Krishna is all powerful. No problem. But he fainted. And this is the Lila Shakti. It's the result of the kind of love that exists in Vrindavan is the devotees. They're so attached to Krishna, and Krishna is so attached to them. So when Krishna is in difficulty, they faint. And when they're in difficulty, Krishna faints. Or becomes at least momentarily astonished. And his intelligence becomes bewildered. And then in a moment, it's gone, and he knows exactly what to do. It's a pastime. And it can't be understood any other way than it's a pastime. Because fundamentally, having gone through the whole of the first nine cantos, we come to understand that there is a source of everything. And the source of everything is a person, supreme person. And everything rests upon that supreme person. In the morning, we're going through this really complicated, arduous section where the details and details and details of resting upon Krishna, that's the basis of everything, is his form, his qualities, his pastimes, his name, and it's resting on a person. Everything is resting on the Supreme Person. And so, those who do not know the Supreme Person, what are they left with? They're left with illusion. And behind illusion is the Supreme Person. But they don't know that because all they know is illusion because they don't know the Supreme Person. And those that become situated in knowledge of the Supreme Person, then they give themselves to him. This is a Bhagavad Gita verse. Have you learned any Bhagavad Gita verses? Do you know this one? Aham sarvasya prabhavo. You know that one? Okay. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam bodha bhava samandita. Let's do it again. Do you know? You can say it with me, but not alone. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam bodha bhava samandita, which is the Bhagavad Gita version of what I just said. Krishna is the from Krishna everything comes. And then he says it the other way around. I am the source of everything, everything comes from me. Backwards and forwards, or forwards and backwards. I'm the source of everything, everything comes from me. Thus knowing, iti matva, what do you do when you know that? Bhajante mam. You engage in his service. And so, supposing you don't know that yet, maybe you just like have an idea that there's something that's the source of everything. And then you read Bhagavad Gita and Krishna says he's the source of everything. So, on the authority, with some faith in succession and the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, I'll take shelter of Krishna, serve him, and then gradually we can start to understand him. That is to say, his spiritual potency dismisses illusion, the covering, it makes us forget who he is, and we can start to understand who he is, and then live our lives according to who he is, and gradually more and more and more be connected, and just like all the time. Like your nice garden out here, and you know where this? How'd you get the garden? Because you have to have some seeds. Where'd you get the seeds? From the source of seeds, not just the seed store. But you know what's the source of the seeds in the seed store? What's the source of everything? So when we're growing a garden, it's good to think Krishna is the seed giving source of everything. And by his plan, the whole thing unfolds, and even if the squirrels do eat something, it's still okay. Yes. He is the basis and source of everything. And he's a supreme person. And as a supreme person, let's say it negatively, is there anything that Krishna cannot do? So then we can say it positively. Krishna can do anything, including getting bewildered. He who is the source of everything can get bewildered. No, he can't get bewildered. Yes, you can get bewildered. And then get unbewildered. Because it's just the action of his potencies for his pleasure. That's because that's everything. And so now he's interacting with his devotees. And what's the purpose? There's one purpose. We read it this morning. It's their pleasure. He is bliss or ananda. And wherever he goes, it's ananda. And he's contacting and exchanging with his devotees, and they're experiencing ananda, even if it looks otherwise. Oh no, entering into the mouth of a big serpent. I mean, the serpent was really big, 8 miles long. That's a big serpent. And his mouth, with his touching the clouds in the sky, it was really big. Big enough to swallow an uncountable number of cowherd boys. Asankyataha. So but it's not just a fiction story. Not a fairy tale or a mythology. It's the personality of Godhead exchanging loving activities with his devotees. And then part of the plan, we go back. Part of the plan here was to liberate Agasura. Like even before Agasura showed up, there was a plan Krishna had to liberate him. And one of the reasons Krishna had planned to liberate him was he was the brother of Putana. And Putana got liberated, not just liberation, not just merging kind of liberation, but she got a place in the spiritual world with Mother Jasoda. You know that? When Putana, you know who Putana was?
Yeah.
So when Putana was killed, what happened to her soul afterwards? But what kind? She became an assistant of Mother Jasoda in Krishna Loka. Wow. And so the verse that describes this says, although she came, this is chapter 6, canto 10, although she came with the purpose, the intention was to kill Krishna, she came in the disguise of a nurse to feed Krishna. And she actually felt some affinity for the beauty of Krishna when she saw him, because he's all beautiful. Although she was a demon and she wanted to kill him, there was these two things, some service and some appreciation. And so he liberated her by giving her a service, a position suitable for one who is a nurse. He overlooked the bad stuff and he looked at the good stuff and accepted that little service. And so it said, if you're going to give a position to Mother, as Mother Jasoda's assistant in Krishna Loka to Putana, how can I reciprocate with these devotees in Vrindavan that you are their everything? Their life, their words, their wealth, their intelligence, their everything. It's exclusively dedicated to you, their families, their this and that. They don't know anything but you. How are you going to reciprocate? Because you've already given yourself to them. So what's left? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says he can't. what's just something that God can't do or Krishna can't do? He can't adequately reciprocate with those who have given themselves, like the Brijvasis give themselves to him. He's indebted to them. The debt he'll not be able to repay. Or as he says to the gopis, they'll have to be satisfied with their own feelings of love for him. Because he can't possibly repay them. That's another It's a nice alternative to material life. It's another kind of existence. And we're being introduced to it by Srimad Bhagavatam's verses and our commentaries. So let's see if there's some discussion.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for coming back again. I have a couple of questions. First question is the reciprocation.
Is what?
The reciprocation that you just talked about. I think the Nitya Siddhas got the reciprocation as the gopis and gopas in Vrindavan, right? They already got the reciprocation by being gopis and gopas.
Yeah.
So, again, more reciprocation from there. It's, like, it's just his love is...
I think you've understood. But yet, nonetheless, it's the nature of love that one likes to reciprocate. I want to speak of when one gives everything, one wants to reciprocate. It's not like there's any end to it from the giving side or the reciprocation side. It's unending.
It goes on and on.
Yeah. Like the flow of a river.
Mm-hmm. So my next question will be, the love that Krishna just felt, like astonishment and surprise, is it the same as when Gajendra Moksha, during the Gajendra Moksha pastime, when Krishna starts running without even shoes and Garuda is following him? He could have just come with Garuda, but Garuda was following Krishna because he just wanted to give moksha to Gajendra. Is it the same as this?
Like, different. It's similar, but it's not the same.
Just reminded me of that pastime.
Well, it's love for his devotee. That's the similar, but he wasn't astonished.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different emotion
than
astonishment.
The third one is a little very subtle for me. It's more for me,
okay.
The question. So recently when we had Radha Shyam Sundar on the altar, I got to do some service. And I was numb. Normally I would be very excited and enthusiastic to do service, but this time I was like, I was stuck. I mean, I do wanted to do service, but there was some distance between me and Shyam Sundar that I felt. So I'm not able to understand. But after Shyam Sundar went away again, then I was back to normal, the way I used to do service with Radha Madhava. So I'm not able to understand, did I have a greed to serve Radha Shyam Sundar, or what happened to my greed? So I felt like that greed was missing during that time, that couple of days.
It can be a lot of different things. And it could be a lot of different things. Being overwhelmed in a mood of on veneration. That is, you know, they're so, Radha Shyama Sundar are so awesome and so whatever, special, spectacular. One may feel, I can't get close because they're so high. But I don't know what you have to answer that yourself. What was the mood and that, or the mood that brought about the block of spontaneous eagerness for service? Not aversion, not atheism or something. So it's some spiritual emotion of some kind.
In the same relation, I had another question. So I was the youngest of all the second initiated devotees. So my thought process was I would shadow and try to learn how they are doing and try to observe as much as possible and learn by observation and by following.
Good.
But when one devotee wanted to take the service instead of me, I felt like giving it rather than me doing it. So I felt like, I mean, in that situation, like, should I be greedy to do the service or should I just give it to my, so I couldn't decide. I just gave it, and then afterwards I felt like, oh, maybe I should have done it. I didn't realize what.
There's not a right or wrong in situations like that. It's not, this is right and that's wrong. Or the other way around.
So then one final question.
It's because it's your relationship. It's your relationship with the Lord and His devotees. Mm-hmm. And when that's at the center, then it can go this way or that way. You know, in other words, He will give you another opportunity, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's this way or that way, main thing is that the pleasure of Krishna and Krishna's devotees is at the center. And Krishna's devotees may be very pleased that, oh, she's so enthusiastic. Or they can be pleased to say, oh, she's so humble. She's so sacrificing. No, so it's pleasing that Krishna and Krishna's devotees that's at the center. No right or wrong answer.
So one last, I need a confirmation, like whether my thought is right or not. So our greed to serve Krishna shouldn't be hurtful to other devotees.
Well, what does that mean?
Like, hurtful? It should not cause a mad elephant offense.
But, you know, excuse me, but what I meant by what does that mean is what's really hurting another devotee versus what's not hurting another devotee. So, that's not an easy question to answer. You may have your idea is this is hurtful and that's not hurtful. But, you know, it depends. There's not a right or wrong answer on what's hurtful, not hurtful in something like this. Your daughter wants to share something.
So I remember, I remember last time when you were explaining like the five rasas, you were saying that they were like seven secondary rasas, right?
Yeah.
And I know you said you wouldn't say them, but is it alright if you told me what those seven rasas were?
You want to know the names?
Yeah. Or like what they are and like their names.
I think we're going to have to ask Shatrupa to look it up.
I have one more question.
Okay.
It's more like a parenting question. My little one and I were reading Srimad Bhagavatam.
I'm listening.
And in the introduction section, there was this conversation about how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you should not be even thinking about, Chota Hardas Thakur was looking at somebody lustfully, and then that was an offense, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt very, that's wrong, and then he banished him from his darshan, and then he committed suicide.
Yeah.
So then...
I have them, Shachirupa, no problem.
So as soon as my daughter heard that, she started crying, I mean... why would he commit, it's a very small thing, and why he would commit suicide, and why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not forgive even after committing suicide. Like, it's hard, like at this age, I don't know how to convince her, or, so how to explain
that. It was a pastime. After that event, he was always in association of Lord Chaitanya singing. One of his gifts was singing.
Mm-hmm.
So the devotees heard Lord Chaitanya would go by the shore, mm-hmm. and he'd hear the beautiful voice of Chota Haridas singing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pastime for Lord Chaitanya to teach a lesson that those who are in the renounced order must never.
Never.
So it was because there are persons in the renounced order that do monkey business. And he wanted his followers to not do that. So he took a very dear devotee and set an example for the course of this exchange with this very dear devotee to teach that lesson to everyone. So then it was said, even in their sleep, they would not do monkey business.
Mm.
Lord Chaitanya's was so strong. So that was the purpose, like chasten his sincere followers. But it was a loving reciprocation. That there was a continued association. Mm-hmm. He didn't become a ghost. He became, associated with serving Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the seven secondary rasas. You ready? Well, one of them you already know.
Astonishment.
Amazement. You know, they're translated in different ways, but this is one translation. Amazement or astonishment. Next one is humor. Next one is chivalry. Chivalry. Grandfather Bhishma. Chivalry.
Yeah. Okay.
Compassion. So Krishna was having these two, both astonishment and compassion. Fury, that's like intense anger. Fear and dread. That's the seven. Fear is, here comes some danger. Dread is, oh no, something bad is going to happen. I'm going to fail my exam. That's different than fear. Fear is, you know, here in comes some guy with a gun and...
Also like incoming?
Well, it's... threat of one's safety, that's fear. And dread is something unfortunate is going to happen.
Okay.
I mean, these are Sanskrit terms. And I'll see if I can get them for you. Anyway, it's in, it calls it something else in, humors. Huh? You have the Sanskrit words? Can you speak louder? Do you have the Sanskrit? Okay, so read the some of them and I'll look for the other ones.
There is comedy, hasya rasa.
comedy. You there?
Yeah.
Laughter, humor, comedy, hasya.
Yes.
Then the bibhatsa is disgust or ghastliness.
Would that be dread?
Adbhuta is astonishment.
Adbhuta.
Veera is
Karuna is another. Compassion. Raudra is another. That's anger. Here we are. Here I have Rupa Goswami's writing with the Sanskrit words. Hasya is humor. Adbhuta is astonishment. Veera, chivalry, or it's here it says enthusiasm. Karuna, compassion, there's another word in English, lamentation. Like in Ramayana, when the sorrow is another. With Lord Ramachandra. Just listen, don't talk. Thanks. When everyone came to know that Ram was banished into the forest for 14 years, there was sorrow and sorrow and sorrow. That the English translation reads like that. Lamentation, sadness, compassion, karuna is the Sanskrit word. It's a secondary rasa. Rodra is anger. Bayanaka, or bhaya, fear. And bibhatsa is disgust. Of course, it's probably written some other different way over there. Bibhatsa. Okay?
Yeah, that's all.
That's the seven. So now you had something else.
Yes, Maharaj. I take care of Krishna and I take care of my children, but sometimes my little one thinks that I take care of him more than her. So, how do I?
I'm listening.
So I don't know how to convince her that I love her more because I'm not there to love him more than them, you know. So,
well, I don't know if you need to convince her, because our service goes to Krishna, and Krishna's parts and parcels, it's particularly the living entities who are in devotee bodies, you know, they're dear to Krishna too. It's not, if one holds Krishna dear, is it possible to not hold one who is dear to Krishna dear? I'm asking your daughter. So you disagree with her. You agree with her.
She didn't get it.
Huh?
She didn't get the question.
Does your mother favor Krishna more than you? Yes or no?
Well, she spends her time down here.
Huh?
She spends her time.
Does she spend her time more at the, like, do you feel like she spends more time with Krishna, like caring for him more than you?
No, most of the time she's down here.
What does that mean? Most of the time.
by down here, because the downstairs is like the temple room, I guess, do you mean that she spends more time over here?
Well, you come to where she is. That's pretty simple. Go help your mother in the kitchen. Instead of saying, you know, she should spend time with me, you go spend time with her.
That's right.
Okay. Next, let's go to online questions.
So this question is from Preeti Vilasini Mataji. Is there any special reason why Agasura got Sarupya liberation? Was it Vaikuntha liberation?
He got Sayuja.
Then this is Visalaksha Prabhu's question. The Gopas and the Gopis are pure devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, but I am in the practice of sadhana bhakti. Still, can one experience the reciprocation of Lord Krishna in the conditioned life also?
Sure.
And this is the third question. This question is from Ruchira Mataji. This is not directly related to today's class, but it's something on my mind and would like to hear from you. Are there any downsides to spontaneously acknowledging and appreciating the selfless service of devotees in a closed team meeting?
In a closed what?
Team meeting?
No.
Or in...
What are there downsides? Well, the only downsides that come to mind are... sometimes, you know, if it's purifying to one's own heart to do such things. At the same time, sometimes I've seen devotees do such things when they're fishing for some appreciation for themselves. Oh, you're so humble. Oh, you're so this and so that. So, you know, if there's going to be a downside, it's because of our own impurities of heart. But otherwise, it's how Vaishnavas deal with one another. They interact in such a way that they're acknowledging privately, publicly, and within their hearts, you know, the nice service of others. That's good. It's wholesome. And is there a downside to something that's wholesome? The only thing I can think of is what I just said. That's it?
So this is Chandana Mataji's question. At which stage of the 9 stages of bhakti does one come to Raganuga bhakti?
Well, those who are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are in the very beginning. I just sent this question this morning to one learned scholar, because my understanding is being a Raganuga Bhakta means following a Ragatmika Bhakta. And a Ragatmika Bhakta is those in the mood of the Brijbasis that have spontaneous love for Krishna, like the gopis or Nanda and Jasoda and the cowherd boys, etc. Those are Ragatmika Bhaktas. And who is Lord Chaitanya? It's Krishna himself. So he's a Ragatmika. So we're followers of Lord Chaitanya, are followers of Rupa Goswami, who is a perfected soul, Rupa Manjari. So from the very get-go, we're beginning in the beginning stages of Raganuga Bhakti. We're following, it's not matured yet, but it's the beginning stage. We know that our worship and our service is taking us there. There's a definition like that in Rupa Goswami's definition of sadhana bhakti. It's going to take us there. So we've already begun. Followers of Lord Chaitanya have begun. It's a raga path. It's not at the matured stage yet, but the seed is already there. You ran out of batteries, right? Okay, we're done. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.